Here we go. You know, Bucky's Tom, they've been around, but I don't know, like 51 years or something like that, with, I don't know, like 16 locations. Bucky's Auto Service Center is the biggest and best in the Northwest when it comes to making sure they take great care of your car. Trust the men and women long before anybody else was wearing rubber gloves, they were. I'm going to try to get Hannah in here and dive in at the exact same time. Ready?
Go.
Did it work? I was underwater. Did it work? Yes, there we go. There she is. Oh, and the cat's there and everything. All right. Hannah, you don't normally cut... Other animal
wow.
around the big pond. Yeah, I know. You don't normally cover stories like this, but the next step for the NCAA is the idea that, hey, we have to start paying these guys and gals.
And actually, I have been covering this for several years because there was a bill in the legislature from Drew Stokesbury, Republican, several years ago.
Yeah.
That actually, a couple of years in a row, he had tried this and failed. And then somehow or another, I got in connected with the lawyer who's behind these suits at the national level. So when yesterday's ruling came down, I immediately called him and said, hey, were you surprised? And he was a little bit, but not entirely. So what we're talking about, of course, is the ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court yesterday in relation to one of his cases. And this has to do with, I'll let him tell you.
It was a challenge to the NCAA rules that limit the amount of compensation that student athletes can be paid. Caps have always been in place. And about 3 or 4 years ago, we started to erode that. So 3 years ago, I got the NCAA to agree that they would pay student athletes the full cost of attendance, which was an increase of about $6,000 a year from what the rules previously allowed. And then I challenged the rules again, and this now says that the NCAA must allow its schools to offer student athletes education-related benefits. So, for example, if they want to pay for a student athlete to go to law school or medical school, and they want to use that as a competitive advantage, they have to be allowed to do that.
And here's the legal argument.
Well, the legal argument is that it's not necessary to restrain what athletes get paid in order to preserve the sport for people to like NCAA athletics. And in fact, everyone knows that the schools and the coaches are getting paid, you know, tens of millions of dollars, and new stadiums are being built, and it's a very professional enterprise. So the notion that student athletes can't participate is antiquated and illegal, in my view. The antitrust laws at the heart of this case is that the schools and the conferences have jointly agreed to price fix, and that's illegal under the antitrust laws.
So not only did this go in his favor yesterday, it went big in his favor.
Not only did they agree with me in a 9-0 opinion, which is very rare these days to get a unanimous opinion from this Supreme Court, but Justice Kavanaugh thinks that we haven't gone far enough and that any restriction of any kind on the right of student athletes to get paid is illegal. That is a significant change. And the court suggested even more. So the NCAA had relied on a case for years to fight off all kinds of legal challenges. And the court said that case is not applicable anymore. So going forward, we're going to have much more latitude to attack the NCAA rules.
And here's why that matters.
Right now it's education-based, but I have a pending case which would prohibit the NCAA from preventing students from monetizing their names and images. So, for example, on social media or endorsements, I think this case is going to guarantee that I'm going to win the right for student athletes to monetize their names and likeness. Times are changing, right?
So his plan moving forward?
I'm going to actually move for what's called a preliminary injunction. So by the end of the summer, I'm going to ask the court to rule that the current restrictions are illegal.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So there you go.
So is he the one that he's not arguing before the Supreme Court, is he?
This is his case, yes.
Yes, wow. I didn't realize.
Steve, I'm sorry, I didn't say his name. That's Steve Berman with Hagen and Berman, and that's here in Seattle, though I think they have offices everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So a couple of things. So we talked to Danny about this yesterday. Danny O'Neill talking about the sports impact. Danny thinks this is the greatest decision ever. And when I raised the issue of could this hurt the product on the field, one of the problems that I have with this system with this decision is that I love college sports right now. I love college football. I love college basketball. Could it hurt the competitive aspect of what I love most? And Danny said, heck yes, it can hurt. But Tom, right is right. And I have to agree with him. But
yeah.
I'm wondering if Berman or any of the other people are at all concerned about the huge number of fans that college, you know, sports have. And if this kind of if college football and college basketball turns into just another pro league, if that actually will hurt the kind of enthusiasm sports fans have, and maybe it won't be as lucrative as they think it will in the future.
And I think what Steve said to me was that and I can't remember the initials, but it's for the other leagues that for some of the smaller, you know, your other sports, not basketball and football and
yeah,
things like that.
Swimming and gymnastics.
They did away with their rules last year. And he said the female athletes are like bringing home, doing really well with that. And he thinks that that's going to continue. And it hasn't hurt the competitiveness there at all. The bottom line is, and this has always been, and I'm always with Danny on this as well, because and I think that if you're talking about basketball, baseball, football, these are college kids, a lot of them who maybe want to go pro, who have that risk of getting hurt. And then, and then what? Do you know what I mean? So I think it's just fair. And as far as the competitiveness, you know, I'm an NFL girl all the way.
Yeah.
Not so much
Dallas Cowboys.
Sports.
Go Cowboys.
Hopefully there's a season this year. Yeah. But I don't feel like there's any loss of the competitiveness in that game. So that's just my personal opinion. But no, I haven't heard that.
But so let's say a high school athlete, so all these colleges start to want to recruit that athlete. Does one college offer more money than another college? So then you end up having like the New York Yankees, where the payroll is so high and you've got the team that goes to the World Series and everyone yells, Yankees suck. I mean, is that what you end up with?
I think that there would still be some sort of possible rulemaking or agreement, you know, perhaps a conference that has to come to some decisions where it's not just them kind of unilaterally putting the cap on and making a bunch of money off of these guys.
That's interesting.
But because I think that could be a concern. But also, you know, you heard Steve Berman say there that it is not legal, according to the U.S. Supreme Court, under the antitrust laws, to not allow these schools to use this as a competitive, or the students to use this as a competition. So maybe, but there should be salary caps, I would think.
Yeah, and we talked about this with Danny too yesterday. The weird thing is that there are antitrust exemptions for the big sports leagues, the pro leagues. You know, I wonder if this whole thing could crumble.
You never know. You never know. But this has been pushed for a long time, and I do think what Danny said is right. Fair is fair.
Yes,
and then
I agree.
They have a thing that basketball is looking at the D League. So you don't do college, you don't
do
pro.
Create their own.
You sort of do this sort of thing in between, and you might be working with pro coaches, because really all the college was an opportunity to be seen and for other, you know, pro teams to see you. Then you to build your Instagram and you build a TikTok audience. So then therefore you have more advertising dollars as you move into the pro leagues. And all it was a platform for you. Because let's face it, you're not really going to school. You're really not getting a degree. It's crap classes and they're just passing you along so that when you graduate, you're using the school and the school's using you. The agreement was, I'll use the platform. Then when you're one and done, kills coaching, where why bother bringing the person on? It changed the whole dynamic of the thing. I would think probably they'll round the horn on this. And 10 years from now, college football, will it be the same?
No, sir. I don't think so. Certainly not.
90,000 people show up at LSU on a Saturday afternoon to watch the Tigers?
Maybe. I think so. I think you still have your fans. I think so. Why is it any different than football?
Well, the thing is, what we don't know is how popular right now. What is the most popular sport outside the pros? It's college baseball, not baseball, basketball and football. Mm-hmm. However, if suddenly they just become, if they're like D leagues and G leagues and they end up having the independence, there's not going to be that kind of hometown enthusiasm or home university enthusiasm for it. And it, and so it's the thing is, sport, I think football is such a great sport. It's going to survive whatever. I'm just thinking that in 10 years, the college connection I had with the Washington Huskies is going to be frittered away through issues like social equity and fairness, which I'm all for. I just think the fan part of me, I think it's going to miss something. That's
okay.
all.
Okay, and then you know what happens? It goes all the way down to high school. So you get some kid who's amazing.
They can already go straight to the league.
I got it. But you, hey, you're at high school. You're not really attending the classes because who wants to step in front of this kid who could possibly next year be paid X amount of dollars to play football? So pass him along. Just pass him along. But, and then the kid ends up breaking his ankle or whatever, and then he has no degree.
Education.
Virtually illiterate, and the society pays for him for the rest of his life.
Just keeping in perspective, though, like 99% of college athletes don't go on to pro careers.
Right, and that's
so
true, yes.
There is a future for amateur sports, even if it's not, there's not much remuneration for it. There is still, competitive value in sports.
And I think, I think that there has to be some sort of structure to whatever ends up becoming the law, the law of the land, if you will, because nobody wants to see the kind of stuff that you're talking about, Tom, where the people who are I'm not a big college sports person. I'm really not. But my goodness, the people who are very passionate and nobody wants to lose that.
Yeah.
And that's, it's one of the bright spots of our world, I think, or our country, seeing the competition between competing schools and all of that. So I think that there's an effort on all levels to make sure that that's sustained.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Anna.
Very cool. You're welcome.
America's team, Hannah's team, the Dallas Cowboys.
Lousy for 20 years and counting.
Ah, Tom loves to throw that in there after she hangs up. Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders, have a player who has decided he wants to come out and tell everybody he's gay, and I'm sure most people are going, okay, all right, is that a big deal? Hang on, is that a big deal, Tom?
Yeah, I think it is a big deal. Like I mentioned, I watch a lot of sports, and they were talking, this came up a few years ago when there was that one Stanford lineman who was criticized. He felt he was being bullied by the some of the offensive linemen who were being real jerks to him. Uh-huh. And there was a lot of discussion about this kind of macho necessity of especially football and especially pro football. And that they did acknowledge among these discussions, they're sure that there are gay players in the NFL, but nobody is, willing to come forth and acknowledge that because there's such a heavy and the discussion among some of the athletes was unnecessary sense of macho in the locker room. That the fact that you get one guy, in fact, this guy who comes out, I don't know if we have some audio.
Here
he just
like,
says, I hope I don't
people?
Have to
I'm
be.
I'm Carl Massive. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania.
There you go.
Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay.
Westchester, Pennsylvania. Wow.
I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate, and I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America, and they're truly doing incredible things, and I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can, and I'm really pumped to see what the future holds.
Yeah,
that may be the only...
Yeah, the idea that the athlete that is gay is effeminate is a strange sort of stereotype.
Yes.
I'm sure if you play football,
ridiculous.
You're not effeminate. You have to do a tremendous amount of things which are considered to be macho. So this guy comes out. I think most people are going ho-hum. America has gone from in 1997, where I think the total number of Americans, when asked, you know, do you support, you know, how do you negative or positive feelings about gay people? We were at 52 positive, right? It's now at 72. No other country has moved as much as America has in such a short period of time to basically go, I got no problem with gay people, whatever, right? I mean, so there you go. This guy comes out. This will do great things for his advertising ability. He will be able to, and I'm saying he's doing it for this reason, but he's certainly going to have no trouble cashing the checks. Because in a world where you have to constantly be talking about, you know, those people that are oppressed, like gay people, prove it to me, then he's going to be able to utilize his position in the identity politics world to be able to make some money.
Yeah, perhaps. I'm not sure that he's going to cash in on that, but if it
maybe raise
money for these charities, I think he seems like an earnest guy. It doesn't feel like just a calculated move.
But and you know, I do someone's think after call this him, one, Tom, we're not going to need this. He'll get a call, right? But he'll get a call to, you know, advertise something. The guy that they got who came out prior to the draft a couple of years ago, drafted in the
Michael
17th
Sands.
Round, ended up being a complete washout. And when people are like, "Yeah, he's going to be a he wasn't that good." I think he tackled Johnny Football once or something in a preseason game, and then he ended up getting cut. But he was really the fact that he was gay and made the thing everybody heralded that as some big deal. This guy's playing for how many years now? For the
5 years.
5 years for the Raiders. So, you know.
And he plays for the Raiders.
Well, Raiders no longer Oakland Raiders, Tom. Come on.
Yeah, Las Vegas. Yeah.
That's right. Las Vegas. And Westchester, Pennsylvania. You know where that is? It's right down the street from QVC. And I used to live in Westchester. Yes.
Now, is that part of Pennsylvania that is rural and redneck and tough as nails type? Or is it more the. No.
It used to be a joke. When you go into Westchester, you go in gay, you come out. No, to get into Westchester, you go in high, you come out gay. Those are the two streets. So I don't know if that's still. They're still.
And you live
that.
There, and so does Carl Nassib, I guess.
Oh, I dated my white witch there, Valerie Champagne. That's when I was living in. In Westchester,
well, no one would question your sexuality then.
No. Who's that guy climbing out of the coffin? Tracy Terrell looking at traffic for us. Thank you, Tom. For a minute there, I thought we weren't going to hear that. You punch through the noise and make us all feel just a little bit more comfortable. Here comes Rachel Bell. There's our bell right there. Biggest and best in Northwest. Nobody. I mean, no one bigger and better. But right beside Muckleshoot Casino, it's got to be Rachel Bell. The two of them neck and neck, leaning it out over the race of just who's even more entertaining. Is it Rachel? Is it Muckleshoot? Is it Rachel? Is it Muckleshoot? They lean in and it's a tie again.
Yeah, we've both been vying to be in the Guinness Book of World Records, but every time one of us just creeps ahead, the other one gets bigger and better. And then Muckleshoot's like, I'm bigger and better. And like, I just want one of us to be in the book, you know, because when I was a kid, I loved looking at the page where the guy or the lady with the longest nails and they were, you know, spiraling over the top of a banister all the way to the floor, longest hair. Like, I just want to be in there, man. And if it's biggest and best, if it's Muckleshoot, whatever, just one of us. Yeah. One of us.
Yeah. But when Muckleshoot's on the podium, Muckleshoot will reach down and grab your hand and then hold your hand up, too, so the two of you will be.
Do you think they'd share their trophy with me?
I think so.
I think so, too. It kind of makes me emotional.
Are you going to be able to fight through the tears and do a story for us?
I guess. Okay, so this comes from a personal story. That's the beauty of working in the news is something happens to you and you're like, this seems like a news story, and you turn it into one. Okay. So I have booked a few tickets for flights in the fall to the East Coast. And oops, sorry about that. And one of them for Thanksgiving, so pretty far in advance. And then last week, over the week, I end up getting three different emails from three different airlines saying, oh, we've changed your flight a little bit. And then I look and my nonstops now have stops. They've changed, you know, morning flights to evening flights. And so I end up having to cancel them all and rebook with another airline at a higher price. So I thought, you know, are they overbooking and then canceling people because summer travel is up? So I called an expert. I called Madhu Unnikrishnan. He is the editor of Skift Airline Weekly. I'm sure you subscribe. It's a trade magazine for airline executives. And he says that it is a combination of huge demand. People are booking flights like crazy for the summer and the fall, and that the airlines were not prepared because they didn't know when we were going to reopen, when things were going to get back to normal, when people would start flying again. So they've had to cancel and change a lot of flights. But also a big reason why they have to cancel flights.
The news this week was that American Airlines was forced to cancel hundreds of flights because it didn't have enough staff. And the issue there is not that it laid off all these people and now is finding itself short-staffed. Pilots have to be trained and certified. They have to do a certain number of takeoffs and landings per month to be certified by the FAA. American did furlough some pilots, but it recalled them, and it had to go through the process of retraining them. Meanwhile, the pilots that were not furloughed also had to do their recurrent training. And another thing with American Airlines is they retired a lot of aircraft types, so the pilots have to be retrained for their new assignments. So there's a lot of training that has to happen, and they just didn't have the capacity to do it all in time to hit summer demands.
I hope you all feel good about that, because I had no idea that pilots constantly had to train or get a certain number of hours. And that is very, very comforting. You just don't hear that very often, things like that. And so also when the pandemic started and air travel tanked, they offered incentives to older pilots and said, hey, you know, if you retire, we'll give you this package. So a lot of pilots took that. So that's part of the problem with not enough pilots. And then when flight attendants were furloughed, just like in the restaurant industry, a lot of them didn't come back. They just moved on. To new careers. So I asked him, you know, should you wait to get a ticket? Should you wait until it's closer to your trip so that you don't have your flight changed like my flights were?
Absolutely not. I think they should book as soon as possible, especially if they plan to travel in the summer. Summer demand, especially to vacation hotspots, is outstripping everyone's expectations. If you wait too long to book, you could very easily run into a situation where you just can't get to where you want to go. And be flexible with your travel plans. They might change in the details. You know, the aircraft type might change, the time might change, the connecting city might change, but you'll get where you need to go.
Aha.
It is not fun, though, because one of my trips, my friend and I booked, you know, the same flight, but with our own credit cards, so different. And one of us lost our flight and the other didn't. And so when you go to try to rebook, you know, all of a sudden
is
it's
that you
like
rebooking.
What's that? Yeah, I know. I'm trying to do it right now. They just canceled another one of my flights.
Another one.
Oh, my gosh. You guys, I'm going to so many places.
Hey, so we did the story yesterday about American. Were you booking on American, or is this another airline?
One on American, one on Delta, and one on JetBlue.
Wow.
And I usually always fly Alaska, and they just didn't go where I was going. And that's like my safety security blanket. I just already didn't want to book anywhere except for Alaska. And I just kept saying, Alaska would never do this to me. I just know that they wouldn't. Yeah.
Not you, Rachel.
No, not me, because I'm big and I'm best.
So what do you end up having to do? You get back on there and you rebook.
You rebook, but I rebooked, you know, with different airlines because they had what I wanted. But then, of course, you're rebooking like a month or two after you originally booked. So it's more expensive or they don't have really the time that you want. So it's not great. I wish that they didn't advertise those flights in the first place, you know.
Like,
but I guess they didn't know. So even though it seems like flights are back to normal because so many people seem to be traveling, Madhu says that they're still only about 60% because business travel hasn't come back. And so when that starts back, if they don't have all the pilots they need, this is just going to keep happening more and more.
Yeah. Was I going to ask you, do you end up, will you call that guy and find out the best day to book? This is often, it's on the internet. People say, the best day to book an airline, wait till Tuesday. Wait till Tuesday because they do this thing Tuesday. And an algorithm steps in there, and then all of a sudden that's the best time. Is there actually a best day?
I don't know.
Can you call him? We'll wait.
Oh, yeah, I'll call him right now. Hold on. Right. Let me make my computer make a sound again. Yeah.
Good. All right.
I feel like the people who always know that stuff are these guys who have a blog and they figured out they don't have to work anymore and all they do is fly for a living so that they could give us advice. You know, you always hear those stories of those. It's always a guy, some dude who figured it out. We got to call him.
All right. By the way, one quick thing before we say goodbye to you. We don't have time to get into the Colorado story, but I do want to ask.
Tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll do it tomorrow. But Tom and I talked about the fact that men's shorts are getting short again.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Oh. Tracy Taylor has already weighed in on it. She'll pass on the men's short shorts. Where are you on men with shorter shorts, no longer wearing cargo pants, but you're going probably, I think it's 5 inches from the inseam down.
Okay.
Yes.
First of all, I will say I never want to see a cargo short if I can help it. I would rather have a short short. Second of all, I would say I don't believe in body shaming, and I don't believe that you have to look a certain way to wear a certain thing. But certainly, when you would see a man who looks model-esque, I don't think you would mind if he was wearing the shorter shorts. So maybe it's just what they look like on the person that get to people. I think that the shorter shorts look kind of neater and tidier, especially if a man has great legs. Also, even if he doesn't, I think people should just wear whatever they want. Sometimes I get annoyed with these, like, leggings aren't pants and shorts are too... Like, if the person feels good, they should wear the shorty shorts. My dad wore them in the 80s. Hold on,
but let's not bring your father in. You always do that with your dad and your dad's arm.
It's because
dad's
of my
like,
severe father
let me say
issues.
This. You've been to say
which is
places.
Why I'm on this show.
So you're advocating wear whatever you want as long as you're comfortable.
Yeah. Why
you ever
not?
ever been to Walmart like in the South?
I actually went a couple years ago to the town where Walmart started. Okay,
like how about Winn-Dixie in upper like northern Florida? You ever been in like a Winn-Dixie on a Thursday night? So you're advocating wear whatever you want to wear as long as you're comfortable.
Pretty much. I mean, maybe, you know, not at your place of employment, but if you're on vacation and you want to wear shorty shorts, why not?
Oh, suddenly you're on vacation now. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
your
I
elitism
think...
is showing, John.
No, Tom, I'm just saying there's a certain, you know, you...
Yeah, yeah. I know.
Okay, for everybody else, everyone else happy with what that person's wearing? You okay looking at what that person's showing you?
You who make your kids wear formal attire on an airplane.
It worked.
Do they wear tuxedos?
No, but Charlie wore dresses, Rye wore suits, blue blazer, because out of respect to everybody else that's on the plane. Mm-hmm. You know, you okay? Okay, you're okay with Crocs then, Rachel? And men wearing really short shorts or all of their thingamajiggers are hanging out while you're sitting next to them on the plane?
You didn't mention the thingamajigger was hanging out.
You know what?
That's a whole different topic.
Always should be present in the top of mind.
And also, Mario Batali ruined Crocs for everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Rachel.
By the way, your kids were flying to Winn-Dixie, John. What gives?
Thank you, Arvell. Appreciate it. Thank you, Michael Shue Casino as well. Here we go. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. Come on in through that state roofing text line. Teeny tiny lady lives in a pickle jar. May choose your letter, and you could be letter of the day. One of the greatest honors possibly to befall you for the rest of your life if you're sort of operating below the bar. This guy's in West Seattle. He has some tools in his truck. Some guy pulls up next to him. We don't have any sound of this, do we, Jacob? No. No. Some guy comes up next to him, another pickup truck, grabs his tools, throws them back of the thief's truck. And then at that point, the man has a decision to make, Tom. Do I jump into the truck of the thief to get a chance to ride in the back of a truck at high speeds while the man driving the truck has no intention of stopping? Because let's face it, at that point, the guy has decided, the guy driving the truck, the thief, I don't want to get caught. I don't want to go back to jail. I don't want to be in prison again, assuming probably he's been in prison before. So he's running away for his life, and the man is now hanging on to tools that could be replaced. So the one guy's got a much bigger motivator than the other guy, but unfortunately they're now both in the same vehicle.
I think, to be fair to the guy who jumps in the back of the truck, I don't think that he was assuming the guy would then take off.
Why
so
not?
I think he's just thinking that he's retrieving the toolkit, and this guy would be too embarrassed to do anything. Instead, this guy acted like a man on the loose, like he was desperate,
which,
he may have been.
What? Oh, embarrassment. So embarrassed. The guy that stole the tools, that what would stop him was just sheer. I'm so embarrassed. I didn't mean to steal your tools. I mean,
that he got caught. For instance, this guy was not, he did not steal. This guy was working at a house.
Yes.
This other guy thinks it's an easy grab. Oh, look it. There's some tools. I can grab this guy's tools. Yes. Grabs his tools, throws them in the back of the truck. I don't think it occurred to him. Hey, he was going to get caught and the guy was going to come after him. This is a classic urban kind of dilemma. How mad can you afford to get with a guy who you don't know blank about? Yeah. Because there are some crazy people out there, and it's just like, I'm always amazed that people, and I don't know if you do this very often, you do it to inanimate objects more often, but you flip off somebody. Who knows that the next guy you don't flip off is some maniac with a machine gun, for all we know. It's like, and what happened is this guy, I think he was just grabbing his tools and then got caught being in the bed of the truck and the guy's taking off. The thing is that I figured, okay, now, who's in better shape? You've got your tools. They mentioned it. One's a hammer. You're in the bed of this guy's truck. He can drive as fast as he wants. You're not going to flip out of the thing. He might have the advantage. You could start banging on the top of the cab if you wanted to. But instead, this guy decided, oh, no, I do not know what I'm dealing with. So he starts screaming at the guy to stop, and the guy doesn't stop. Right. So he eventually jumps out with his tools. He did get his tools, but he broke his ankle, they suspect, and he had to be taken to the hospital. And I'm sure he's looking at that hammer saying, you weren't worth it.
Yes.
You weren't worth a broken ankle. And let that be a lesson to us all. Even when someone wrongs you, sometimes getting back is not the best way to deal
with
it.
And we need more thieves that are roaming the streets of Seattle, stealing stuff in order to sell stuff, to be embarrassed by their behavior. Because ultimately, it's embarrassment that stops the thief
from
stealing stuff.
He got caught, in effect.
Yeah. By the way, he's still on the loose, isn't he? The embarrassed.
Yeah, they haven't found the truck either. Yeah, so.
All right. There you go. I think it's instinct. And then all of a sudden you realize, oh my God.
Yeah,
oh my
I
God.
Know. I agree.
It's the dog that catches the car. All right.
Did I ever tell you about the time I chased down a thief in
Paris? That's your one story. You didn't get time for it. Too bad. Here's Tracy Taylor.